Yes, so what do you do when life happens? Well, on April the 19th, 2016, we get catalytic. Hi, I am your host, Cheryl Hirsch Kramer. I am so happy that you chose to be with us tonight. We have one of our all-time favorite guests on Catalytic Radio joining us, Dr. Dean Schrock. We'll bring him on in just a minute. But first of all, thank you for choosing us. We're always delighted when you come to see us either in person or via the archive, and we want you to participate tonight. Yes, we're taking calls. How about that? So if you want to call in and ask Dr. Schrock a question as we go along, please do. He is here to help. And the number you can call is area code 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Give us about 5 to 10 minutes to get started by explaining the topic before you do, and then we'll take your calls happily, and we'll see how much we can all learn together. So my website, should I forget to mention this later, is transformingthroughlove.com. Please check it out. And our guest website tonight is deanschrock.com. That's deanschrock.com. Who is Dean Schrock? Well, if you didn't know before, you're going to know tonight. First of all, he's a sweetheart. I'm very blessed to count him as my friend. He is a noted body, mind, spirit, medicine expert. He is a best-selling author. He's written the books Why Love Heals and Doctor's Orders Go Fishing. He has participated in the book The Power of the Heart with Baptiste DePauw. We had both Dean and Baptiste on Catalytic Radio last fall. Dean's known for his work with guided imagery. He's done a lot of work with cancer patients, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. He has a chapter in a new book that recently came out called Transformative Imagery. So we're going to talk about guided imagery. Is it possible to imagine your way back to health? If you ever wanted to know the answer to that, we've got a great resource person for you this evening. How are you tonight, Dean? What's going on?
Hi, Cheryl. I'm good. Thanks. I always enjoy this time to talk with you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. And I'm looking forward to learning from you tonight. I've done some work with this, but you're going to teach us all. So let's just get some basics started first. What exactly is guided imagery?
Well, I'm trying to say it in a way that most people will probably understand as clearly as I can say it. And that is, it's like self-hypnosis. It's the idea of a suggestion and then people's belief in or acceptance of that suggestion. More formally, we might call it the mental picturing or thinking of a desired outcome. And in a way, I call it a form of mental rehearsal. And so however we learn something by observing or practicing and experiencing or modeling, we can do this in our minds with our imagination. And it may sound a bit far-fetched initially, but when you think about how you learn something and perceive it, it goes into your brain and is stored as neurons and so forth. Well, almost, I don't know how many, but literally thousands of the same neurons are stimulated when you imagine something as when you actually observe it or see it or practice it. So it's a way, I say, to cheat, that you can actually imagine doing something and get a similar benefit as if you were actually doing it.
That is so cool that we can imagine it and have the same experience as if we were really living it. Now, I know the answer to this question, but please share with our audience, how did you get into doing this work?
Well, it started with my personal experience. This goes back to the 70s, and I attended a self-improvement course, workshop, whatever, and I was introduced to guided imagery where we were being taught in this program how to overcome learned limitations, you know, conditioning that happens, you know, right from the get-go and so very effectively is put in place in childhood. And so how could we learn to let go of those limitations and now introduce new beliefs, new ways of handling our lives and what we want to achieve in life? And in doing these exercises, we would do two in an evening. And this went on, I think, for 6 weeks. I quickly realized how good I felt following these classes, and they were at night. And so I might not be done, say, until 9 o'clock, but I remember thinking how good I feel and felt so good I didn't want to go home. And, in fact, many times didn't. I would stay out purposely because I felt too good to just go home and go to bed. And then one thing led to another. As I was learning how you could actually apply this, I applied it to my hay fever. I had had hay fever symptoms for about 15 years and was told by the physician who was giving me medication to attempt to suppress some of the symptoms that I would have to live with it. Well, that wasn't my personality. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I wasn't willing to accept. I just had to live with it. So I used guided imagery to imagine myself able to be free of these symptoms and feel good and normal and so forth. And the very next year, and for 10 years, I didn't have hay fever symptoms. Now, obviously, that took a 10-year period to experience all of that, but within the next year and two, I had actually, well, I'm going to digress for a moment. I had torn up my knee pretty good when I was playing soccer in college and was told by the orthopedic surgeon that I'd have to have surgery within 10 years. I could try to rehab it. And so it turned out to be 12 years. My knee really did hurt, and I was becoming pretty immobile. And then the fellow who had taught me, this doctor had taught me about guided imagery, he said, well, why don't you do guided imagery instead of the surgery? And I said, you don't know what I said to this guy in response. I mean, that's nuts. How do you mean? Just imagine my knee well and I won't have to have the surgery. But he had a way of challenging me and said, hey, do it for a week. And so I did. I made up an imagery script where I imagined my knee was healthy and I was able to move with ease and comfort. And within 2 days, Cheryl, I had no pain. And by the end of that week, I had full use of my knee and I've never had surgery. And then I also used it to actually gain weight, but not gain any size in my waistline. So I had a fair amount of personal experience with this that all have seemed too good to be true. I don't want to sugarcoat this. I was not a believer, except that I couldn't deny my experience. So I went back to school to study it, and partly of the mind, I'm going to figure out what really is at work here, because the mind is not that powerful. You just can't do this. And then, as you might imagine, one thing led to another where I ended up, my doctoral dissertation was on guided imagery and wellness. And then my experience as director of mind-body medicine for all of those cancer centers. And even interning with Dr. Carl Simonton, who was the one physician probably recognized most for pioneering the use of guided imagery with cancer. So I've had a great deal of experience and study. To now know that there is, I want to say the mind is more powerful than you have any idea and is certainly capable of reversing, even Dr. Andrew Weil says, he believes capable of reversing any disease process.
Now, isn't that inspirational to hear this? You know, we think that when something happens to us, that's it, we're done. And here you're telling us that our mind can actually create a whole different outcome. So I'm going to ask you if you would help me. I've got a couple of questions that are up for me right now. I don't know if you recall my mentioning my neighbor who had cancer, and I offered to work with her last year when she was going through treatment, and she said to me, what you're telling me isn't logical. My father was a PhD in math, and I'm a member of Mensa, and what you're telling me isn't logical, so therefore I can't accept it as being true. You know, keeping in mind my dog lived for 2 years. Well, she passed away last Friday. The cancer was in remission. And it came roaring back, and she passed away. So the two questions that she raised to me, I'm going to raise to you. She said, what you're telling me about guided imagery, that's not logical to me. Is this indeed logical that this can work? Am I missing something here?
Do you want me to answer that question first?
Please, would you?
Sure. I'll certainly do my best. One of the things that I think is remarkably scientific and logical is to try to understand the placebo effect. Now, the placebo effect is all about your beliefs and expectations. And it is so real, it is why we have to have control groups when we do research, or ideally even double-blind studies, so that neither the persons being tested or the treatments being tested or even the people applying or administering the treatments, no one knows which is the real treatment, which is the sham treatment or placebo. If we don't control for patients' beliefs and expectations, the research essentially is not worth considering. That's how real this is. That's how logical it is, other than when you say logic and the idea that your beliefs and expectations can change something physical, when we think our thoughts are not physical as such, is that seems illogical, but it's very real and very scientific.
Is there data on this as to some of the successes that you've had with your clients?
I can't say data in terms of like the research that was done looking at people who attended my program, my wellness program, compared to other cancer patients who had the exact same diagnosis and stage and, you know, date of diagnosis and same doctors and the same hospitals, et cetera. So we did a matched control study where we showed that the wellness program, which very much included guided imagery, improved survival with cancer, but there are certainly lots of studies showing that guided imagery can improve any number of effects related to cancer, and of course much more. In the most recent chapter you talked about in my introduction, medical applications of guided imagery in the new book, Transformative Imagery, that's where my colleague and I listed, well, I don't know how many studies we finally listed in that chapter, but there really is an extensive list. And then I also co-authored the chapter on mind-body medicine and Dr. Andrew Weil's textbook, Integrative Oncology. And I know that we have 160-some research citations looking at mind-body approaches and certainly including guided imagery. In fact, there were so many studies using guided imagery, Cheryl, that we cited meta-analyses because there were just so many.
That's beautiful to hear. Is this becoming more accepted? Then, I mean, I'm assuming that there are a lot of physicians who will touch this with their head foot pole. But for people who are open to different approaches, is this becoming more accepted in the medical community?
Well, unfortunately, or the reality is that in medical school, if you are a medical student, while now there are electives looking at alternative medicine approaches, whether that's mind-body stuff or the role of nutrition and exercise and fitness, which you may think is not exactly radical, most physicians are not required to this day to study these subjects. They may be offered as electives, but it doesn't mean that, in fact, the physicians are required to study them as part of getting their license. So the point of that is that if they haven't really studied it, and their medical school is not emphasizing the role and the real benefit of these other modalities, you can appreciate then as that student what you're likely to think of them. So unless you have some prior experience belief with some of these other things like meditation and so forth, chances are you're not going to really be encouraged to use them or understand them in your practice. So that means then the probability is your physician is not likely to promote these other things, you know, like mind-body approaches, certainly not like he or she would promote radiation, chemotherapy, or surgery in the treatment of cancer. Now, having served as director of mind-body medicine for a large group of cancer centers, I can tell you clearly that there are those who are open to this, but my candid experience with all of these different medical directors is, I swear, and even I would say the nurses, it was like a don't rock the boat kind of approach to me and what I was doing. Is they had their way of doing things in their system and seemed pretty comfortable and confident with what they were doing. And the idea of some outsider, in a sense, coming in to do something they didn't fully understand. So in reality, I would say that while things are changing, I would have to say that the majority of physicians, my guess is, are not particularly knowledgeable or open to other than conventional metal treatments, at least certainly with cancer at this point.
Okay, so let's focus this. If there's somebody listening to this broadcast right now who was recently diagnosed with a cancer, and they're listening to what you're saying and they're thinking, I want to try this out for myself, where would you point them?
Well, if you're thinking about, say, a book where they could read about it, there are numbers of books, including my first book, Doctor's Orders Go Fishing, which documents the wellness program that I taught and was researched and showed to improve survival of cancer. And within that book, I definitely talk about guided imagery and how it works and how they can use it. In fact, the guided imagery exercises that I created for the patients and families who went through my program that were included in that research, I have those printed in the back of the book so people could record them for themselves or use them however and learn or use at least what I did back then. And I'll be glad to talk further about what I think are things to take into account to include in a guided imagery exercise or in the use of guided imagery to bring about more of what they would like. But anyhow, if you were to just look up guided imagery, you know, the way the internet works today, you know, you would be overwhelmed, I'm assuming, with information telling you about guided imagery and resources. Now, of course, just because somebody has a website that talks about guided imagery doesn't make them an authority necessarily. But I feel pretty comfortable that most people know about wellness or in their communities have wellness programs, and it would be highly unusual for someone there not to be able to explain and inform people more about the use of their mind and how they can incorporate that into whatever else they might be doing that's a little more conventional. I just gave a talk on medical applications of guided imagery to a hospital last week, and it included also the staff of the cancer centers. And I remember one physical therapist speaking up, and I was explaining how we had found one. Prior to my work with cancer, I actually worked with people recovering from strokes, and we would have people imagine their physical therapy along with actually doing it, and we found it always went better, faster when they did that. So I would certainly offer myself as a resource. And as you said, they can go to my website, deanschrock.com, and get information. So I think there's a lot of evidence now and information that people could learn more about this. Maybe it's just because I'm so familiar with it, you know, I think it's readily available, but I'm pretty sure it is.
So you need to go to his website. You need to go there anyhow. It's a great website. There's a free class. We'll talk about that in a bit that you can register for and get on email for 6 days. And he's got so much great information there. So if you have any interest at all in natural health or in body, mind, spirit medicine, this is the place to go, deanschrock.com. Now, I'd like to ask one more question on behalf of my late friend whose funeral just ended a couple of minutes ago. And I feel awful I couldn't work with her, but it was her belief system, and I honored that. I allowed her to have her experience. It felt like the most respectful thing to do. When she was diagnosed with cancer, she was always terrified of getting cancer. I remember she was an advocate in the neighborhood for having the landscapers use non-toxic pesticides because she'd had a number of dogs die and she thought it was pesticide exposure that caused that. She could have been right. So when she was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, she felt powerless against the disease. Cancer's terrifying, you know? And she said, okay, all I can do is chemo. You know, the cancer never made me sick, but the chemo made me very, very sick. But that's the only thing I can do right now to fight the cancer. How does this help a cancer patient feel more powerful, knowing that they have the power of the mind to help them to create a different income, very possibly?
Well, I think you've used a key word there about the idea of power or empowering yourself to know that there's some things you can do yourself to make things go better. But one of the things I'm very clear about when I teach this is to never make some guarantee that, you know, if you just do this, you're going to have an improved outcome. I just know the probability is that that is true. And because of the placebo effect, we know that approximately one-third of the time, people's beliefs in their treatment or their doctors or whatever it is they're trying to do or achieve, one-third of the time it's going to come true just because they believe it. So when I talk to people, say who might have cancer or dealing with whatever it is, I ask them, how would you like to improve your odds by a third? And it's kind of like a duh question. You know, well, yeah. Well, that's exactly what the placebo effect does. And then this is one way you can now use the placebo effect to your advantage. I can't tell you which one-third of you will, in fact, benefit, but how would you like to increase your odds? And that's just how real this is and how, again, scientific it is. You can improve your odds tremendously And so whether it's chemotherapy or radiation, especially you can affect the symptoms. In surgery, whenever I've worked with someone and created a pre-surgery exercise, guided imagery exercise, they almost always have much less pain than is anticipated. And early discharge, you know, things just go better as a result of rehearsing or imagining and, in a sense, telling your body how it is that you want it to respond.
That's brilliant that we have that kind of power. And for whatever reason, we don't believe it, do we?
Well, remember, I was among those disbelievers big time to start with. Even after I had some of my experiences, it just, you mentioned with your friend being, it's illogical. Well, it really is illogical because I think we think that our bodies are physical and our thoughts are not physical. Then, and for many people still, you know, how if the immune system, for example, which only relatively recently was always thought to function independently of any other system in the body, including the central nervous system. So if your central nervous system, your brain and spinal cord, are not connected to the system we say fights disease, how can your thoughts or beliefs or attitudes affect immune function, affect the way your body is able to monitor and keep in check any disease process? Well, of course, now we have the study of psychoneuroimmunology, but I wouldn't be surprised if, in fact, this new science, which was actually really made known through medical journals back in the early 80s, is still not yet adopted into medical textbooks. Now, I don't want to state that definitely, but it's just the way it works, that science moves very slowly. But I will tell you, without reservation, there is a significant amount of research absolutely documenting the interaction between your emotions and how your immune system responds. And so that's one of the reasons we say to be positive, or I say go fishing, do more of what you really love, because your body responds to how you're feeling. And if you're feeling like you're not in control, trapped, hopeless, helpless, it literally slows down the cells that would fight disease. And if you're feeling hopeful and energized and so forth, it actually increases the number and activity of those cells that fight disease.
It makes sense. It completely makes sense. Now, we talked about your personal experiences using guided imagery to heal things in your life. Give us an idea of other conditions that this has helped in the past.
Well, because of my work, firstly, with dealing with strokes and also with chronic pain when I worked in that rehab hospital, I remember that I found myself in a position to help people in the process, again, of recovering from a stroke, which can be uncomfortable, learning to re-educate muscles, as we say, after a stroke can be painful. And so I would have people imagine that when they were actually doing the exercise, that they would feel good, and to focus on why they were doing the exercise so that they, in fact, could regain their independence. And in that process, that's what we found, is that people were able to do it more comfortably and respond more quickly to their therapy and hopefully get back to feeling relatively normal. It's not an easy process, again, and ideally, hopefully, that people can be discharged back to home and recover. But unfortunately, that isn't always the case. And so I don't want to put it out there to you or your audience that this is just some panacea. It's another tool, a very effective tool, that it can be used very clearly, I found, in helping people in their recovery from strokes, and certainly with chronic pain as well. And that wasn't an easy sell in my experience either, because normally I didn't see someone dealing with their chronic pain until maybe they were 5 years into this experience, and with their medical treatments or medicines being relatively ineffective, that then I used to think, oh boy, you know, these, because they, people would actually say, you know, this guy's going to try to have me imagine my pain away, and how silly is this? But anyhow, if they gave me a chance to work with them, I was able to demonstrate very clearly that they could learn to do that. And I remember another instance, or numbers of instances, but another example where in rehab, it was common for people to come in with having had a leg amputated below the knee related to diabetes and poor circulation. And now they would be concerned, as you might imagine, that they were going to lose the other leg from poor circulation. So I was pleased to show them within 1.5 hours that they could improve their circulation dramatically. But my candid experience with this, too, is that most people didn't keep it up when I showed them how they could use imagery to do that. So there's still a learning process and a trust process that people need to really give it a fair chance. But I have so many examples, and of course with cancer, I had numbers of examples where, like your friend who was in a very late stage, and then the odds are really against you, it makes it so much tougher when it's a late stage. But I had people defy the odds, you know, when they should be dead, that they weren't. And to the extreme, one fella, he used his guided imagery so effectively that when he finally did die, that his wife buried him with his guided imagery player and audio tape that I had made for him.
I remember that story. You shared that on one of the previous shows we did together. I just love that story. And I can tell you, as a stroke survivor, guided imagery was a part of my process. I was involved with a program called Ageless Grace, which stimulates neuroplasticity in the brain. So if people don't like big words, it makes your brain work better. You create new connections in your brain to help you do things you lost the ability to do. So we would pretend to do things. And the thinking was, if you pretend to do something, that stimulates your body to thinking that you really are doing it. So eventually, you might actually be able to do it. And that certainly happened in my case.
Right.
It was brilliant. And for the men who are listening to this, you're going to love this story. I couldn't make this up if I tried. I knew a man many years ago who imagined himself to have a bigger penis, and it worked. And I asked him about that. I said, "How exactly?" And he lived in Oregon, by the way. I said, "How did you do this?" And he says, "I just believed it was possible, and every day I focused my energy on it." And he was pleased with letting it develop. You know, some farmers like to grow a big pumpkin. That's what he grew. And there are many uses for this. It's quite amazing what you can accomplish with this, isn't it?
Well, I almost don't want to even attempt to say something serious. But the fact is that blood flow is one of the easiest things to control and to learn to control. So it doesn't surprise me on one hand. It's just a novel example.
It's an interesting example, isn't it? It really is. Now, before I get into what happened with my first dog, and I talked to you a little bit about that on email. Okay, so guided imagery, if you're doing it for yourself, can people who don't think that they're imaginative be trained how to do this?
Yes. I think guided imagery, in a sense, is a misnomer. The idea is that because we call it imagery, we think that we have to be able to imagine it or see it. But the fact is that people visualize whether or not they realize it. And an example I tend to use is I would say to people, olive, and then say, okay, when I said olive, was your olive black and ripe or green and stuffed with pimento or whatever? And they always answer. And I say, do you understand you could not have answered that unless you imagined this olive? And then I say, umbrella. And then I say, was your umbrella open or closed? So, again, whether or not you realize it, you actually do visualize. But what's my opinion, the most key part of this is a person's intention. So rather than being concerned whether or not you're a great visualizer, it's the idea of really thinking and intending, and it doesn't hurt to visualize, but maybe most importantly of all, feeling that you are now the way you want to be able to feel. And sometimes we even call it end result therapy or end result imagery is like the song, the old song that went, accent the positive, eliminate the negative, and don't mess with Mr. In-Between, is you don't have to go step by step through the process to get where you want. Many times that's very realistic and practical. You know, if you're in a great deal of pain, to now imagine all of a sudden you're pain-free may be too big of a leap for some people, And so you can imagine it in steps, whatever feels right or works for you. But otherwise, you certainly, I would encourage you to include the end result image and feeling and acting as if you, in fact, were well or whatever it is you were trying to achieve.
Quite amazing. The possibilities are just endless and stunning, and look what we can do for ourselves.
Oh, it is, because, you know, what's interesting is that I find that imagery is probably more used in sports and business than it is in health. And what's interesting about business and sports is they're more interested in results and not necessarily understanding the dynamics or mechanics. And I would say if you were to go to any serious sports camp to learn a sport and so forth, it would be unusual for part of that practice to not include mental exercises. That's where you imagine yourself performing in the way you want. So sometimes there are even books called The Inner Game of Tennis or The Inner Game of Golf. And I can pretty much assure you there's going to be a chapter or information about imagining yourself performing, not just physically practicing a particular way to grip the club or to grip your racket and so forth.
Okay, so we're both from Pittsburgh, and we've established that in the past. We went to the same freaking high school. I mean, we have a lot in common, you and I. You remember Forbes Field, right?
Of course.
Who hasn't spent time on Forbes Field? God, I missed that place. It was a great park. Did you ever hear the story about Babe Ruth and the home run in Forbes Field?
I'm not sure.
Okay, so at the end of his career, he got his last, I think, home runs never, 7-11, 7-12, and 7-13. He didn't get 7-14 at Forbes Field. I was a big baseball fan. My first major in college was sports writing. I know that doesn't come as a surprise to you, but I used to love sports. So he played his last few games at various places. Forbes Field was where he played, I think, his next to the last game. And it was one of those legendary stories where this kid came up, and the kid was quite ill, and Babe Ruth pointed to the top of the grandstand and says, "I'm going to hit a home run on top of this just for you." And that's exactly what he did. He saw it, and he created it. And if you remember the distance between home plate and the top of the right field grandstand, that was a pretty big home run.
Yeah, that's a long distance, because that's where the knot hole club sat. When I was a little boy, you could go sit in general admission in right field. Yeah, Roberto Clemente was the right fielder. I remember that well.
He was amazing. I got to wear his uniform. I'll tell you that one time. I'm a big sports fan, but we have some good memories. But, you know, it's a perfect example of somebody who creates an outcome by visualizing it first. So if it does work in sports, why not use it in health? Makes total sense.
Well, indeed. And, of course, because of my scientific experience with this, I can feel especially comfortable saying to people they can. This is very real, very scientifically based, so I can certainly tell people very practically how to apply this, but knowing full well that there's science behind it, and feel very comfortable then that I'm not wasting their time, and they can genuinely expect to, however they participate in any therapy, why they do it, that they're hoping to feel better, become healthier. And I would say that guided imagery, because it draws on the placebo effect, and we know how powerful that can be, is likely to be as powerful as anything else they would do. When you think about studies being done, and I remember one that I quote in Doctor's Orders, Go Fishing, a study done by the Journal of the American Medical Association, where they reviewed for many years all of the studies done with chronic pain. And this journal, this very highly regarded medical journal, concluded that 35% to 75% of all pain was related to the placebo effect and not the treatment. And that in the most controlled studies, double-blind studies, that the placebo effect or a patient's beliefs and expectations accounted for 55% of the benefit of the treatment. So this suggests that it's what you believe to be true about your treatment or the person administering and so forth is actually more important than the treatment itself or more effective. And that also they reported that the more extreme the treatment and the more extreme the diagnosis, the more extensive the treatment, the better the placebo effect works, which may not be logical either, but that's the truth. So when you're dealing with something really serious, your belief is that much more powerful. So again, I am so comfortable and so pleased to be in a position to tell people how they can do this and why I encourage them to do this.
So we're talking with Dean Schrock, PhD. He is the author of Doctor's Orders Go Fishing, book you need to get if you're interested in having a healthy, happy life, good book to get, and Why Love Heals. He's written chapters in this new book, Transformative Imagery. He's written for Dr. Andrew Weil's anthology. He's written for Baptiste the Pop Doctor. I'm sure he'll be delighted to hear this. He's written in the Power of the Heart book. And he's known as an expert in his work with guided imagery. And we have him here tonight. So if you're listening to this, and if you would like to interact with Dr. Schrock, and perhaps he can facilitate a session just for you, that's possible. We've got a half an hour left in the show. So the number is 888-627-6008, and his website is deanschrock.com. We'll go there again. I think this is a great time to link on to something you just talked about the attitude. And, you know, my uncle died of pancreatic cancer. He lived about half a mile from Forbes Field during the last 6 months of his life. And he had a doctor who created a death sentence by looking at his chart after he'd been operated upon for, they were doing an exploratory pancreas surgery. They weren't sure if it was cancer or pancreatitis, and they did an exploratory. They still didn't have a diagnosis. And my uncle went to see this physician who was not there in the hospital when he was a patient, looked at the chart, closed it, looked at my uncle and said, "You'll be dead within 6 months." So what did the doctor do? He created an outcome for my uncle. And my uncle died 6 months and one day later. Can you talk about the power of the doctor using words that create a death sentence? And what do you do if you have a physician who uses language like that?
Right. In fact, when we wrote our chapter on mind-body medicine for the textbook Integrative Oncology, we started off with the placebo effect and the power of physicians' words and just how people use imagery or the idea of suggestion all the time, whether or not they realize it, and when it's coming from an authority like a physician, that those words can be as effective as any scalpel, you know, as any medical treatment. It is very real, and unfortunately, it can be very alarming if people are not careful about how they talk about dealing with the treatment of a problem, or, you know, even in delivering the information about a diagnosis and a prognosis. So in general, I think we have found it to be a better approach to say that ethically and legally, this is your diagnosis and what their prognosis is based on current statistics. But it doesn't mean that you have to be a statistic, that there are things we can do and we're going to do as many as we can and as you're open to help you in dealing with your recovery so that you can make it positive without delivering some kind of, this death sentence almost the way you presented it by saying that, yes, based on statistics, you probably will die in 6 months, but I don't think that's very advisable to say and leave it there. It's just that, especially now because of my work and knowing that there are many other things you can do, and in the textbook Integrative Oncology, there are more than a dozen therapies other than conventional medical that are listed with huge amounts of research support. So ideally, we have integrative medicine treatment centers or hospitals or clinics where physicians, I don't think properly or appropriately, need to know it all or need to try to know it all. Even within oncology, they have radiation specialists, they have medical oncologist specialists, they have oncology surgeons and so forth, and they refer within each of their disciplines because one is not an expert in the other. And so it makes perfect sense to me that you would have someone with a discipline that they really have an expertise and understand the science and so forth to be part of that team, to have that available to be explained and taught by that other person and included as an option in that person's treatment, but not so much just as an option, but truly as we recommend that you do this as part of your treatment, but certainly make it clear that this other approach is available and that it is recommended as part of their treatment.
If you're dealing with a physician, let's say that you want the best of the best, and I know somebody who went through this. She died of a very rare cancer after 9/11, and she wanted the best doctor, and the best doctor had a lousy bedside manner, and he gave her very poor odds for survival, and she didn't live more than, I think, 6 weeks once she'd been diagnosed. But she believed this was the right doctor for her because he was the best of the best. Do you ever suggest a way to block out the doctor's energy? You can just focus on the positive. Is that even possible, or do you change doctors? What would people do in a case like that?
Well, there are numbers of options, as you already said, that, you know, they can change doctors. They can just listen to the medical advice or the statistics and so forth, and then otherwise, you know, take that information in and act on what they think is best. But I think you realize that most people don't have that kind of comfort or discipline to really feel good about acting on their own and taking in the information and not necessarily accepting a prognosis to be, you know, well, that's it, and there's nothing more you can do, just like I did certainly in a more minor way with my hay fever, but it was very real. I wasn't willing to accept that, and I realized that there was so much more you can do. And I hope people are more aware today, certainly with nutrition and exercise or fitness in particular, but also with whether we call it mind-body medicine or stress. If you can manage your stress more effectively and have a good nutrition program and a diet and exercise and fitness program, these are the pillars of wellness. And you're going to not only help yourself in terms of recovery, but obviously a better approach is don't wait till you get sick before you get smart, learn to manage your stress, learn to eat properly and exercise properly, and this will be so much better in terms of then the incidence of illness or recovery.
You know, and that's wisdom. How many of us get the religion after the diagnosis, where if we have it before the diagnosis, there may never be a diagnosis. So what you're saying, that's true wisdom.
I try to be realistic with people and still be very encouraging that, and I can't give you numbers with this, but, you know, if you have a heart attack today or heart disease and you're treated, almost certainly you're going to be recommended to change your diet and to, you know, eat more of this and less of this. But my experience clinically with this is most people don't just do that. Unless you've got your wife on your back and, you know, beating you up about it and so forth, a lot of people still don't take this seriously, just like I found with guided imagery and being able to help people, you know, with the potential for another amputation. It's so new. It's so different from our way we think about illness and largely looking to physicians to medicate, and that's the silver bullet. And it's a whole lot easier to take a pill than to, you know, build up your discipline around eating healthier and exercising and doing things like meditation or guided imagery and taking time for yourself just to have fun. I can't tell you the surprise I had in working with people and trying to teach them and develop a will to live, to take more time for themselves instead of always doing for others. And in my research, I couldn't conclude my patients live longer than because of this will to live that I hope to instill, because they found it too selfish. And I was just astounded here. I thought I was giving them a license to steal, if you can imagine. You're being treated for cancer, and one of your doctors are telling you that as part of your treatment, you need to take more time to do what you really love. But for most of them, again, honestly, they said it was too selfish. They didn't do it, and that's when I ended up having to rethink this and make a different conclusion with my research, and that was that they got better because they felt listened to and cared for and supported, and then why I went on to write Why Love Heals. I had to try to figure out, well, how does feeling listened to and cared for, or loved and cared for, as Dean Ornish said, with heart disease, how does that translate into remission from heart disease or cancer? And so I did my best to accumulate, I thought, a lot of evidence from different perspectives why that would actually work. But again, there's much, much more people can do other than conventional medicine. And I am not saying for a moment don't do conventional medicine. I'm just saying there's more you can do to increase your odds, and to use your word again about empowering yourself, that you can do to not feel stuck or trapped, or that, you know, there's nothing you can do. There's a lot you can do.
Yeah. Can you talk about what goes into creating an effective guided imagery session for yourself?
Well, you know, when Dr. Herbert Benson was looking at meditation, and he really went out on a limb back in the 70s to investigate, as a Harvard professor, was there any benefit to real meditation that could be measured? And the four things that he determined, well, firstly, that meditation positively created a relaxation effect, and then he went on to write his classic book called The Relaxation Response. But the four things that he found were necessary as part of that was, one, to be in a quiet environment, two, to have a relaxed posture, three, to have something to focus your attention on, and in his initial research, he just had people repeat the word one over and over, and then he did additional research where he asked people to have an affirmation that had meaning for them. And then the fourth step was a passive or let-it-happen attitude. And so with guided imagery, I would say that those recommendations definitely hold true, is that we know now that to become relaxed facilitates the guided imagery and the outcome of your guided imagery. So whether you learn a relaxation procedure like progressive relaxation, which I think many people would already be familiar with, or whatever the centering process where you learn to focus your attention and minimize other kinds of distractions. And then you want to actually state what it is that you want. But as I said earlier, the key really is in the end result in particular, and feeling the end result, that it's achieved. Act as if. And so at the end of any guided imagery exercise where my favorite, and my favorite is because this is what I found most people said they would do when I asked them if you could do anything to relax. And most people said they would go on vacation near water, in warm weather near water. So I always ask, though, if I'm dealing with someone one-on-one, what they would do to relax, and they wouldn't necessarily go on vacation that way, but most people do. So you create an exercise where you would feel relaxed. So rather than just saying to yourself, relax, put yourself in a setting in your imagination where you would be relaxed. And then once you do that, is then imagine what it is you want in terms of an outcome. And then I say, see it. And again, whether or not you can actually imagine it clearly is still think about it. You know, what would you see if you really were happy and healthy? Whatever you were trying to accomplish, and really see it and think it, and then feel it. And this is really key, as I've already said, is allow yourself to feel how you would really feel if you have, in fact, achieved what it is that you wanted. And then lastly, hear it. And so what would you say to yourself, or what might you imagine someone else saying to you if you now were able to achieve what you wanted? So let's say you were being treated for whatever the medical disorder, and then you go back to the doctor, and the doctor says, wow, this is perfect. You know, everything is great. Whatever you're doing, please keep it up. So imagine your doctor and nurses or family and friends telling you, hey, you look great. I'm so pleased that you're so well. So see, feel, hear. Imagine yourself firstly relaxed in some way, and then whatever it is that you want to achieve, and then act as if. And very importantly, again, feeling what it is, how you would feel if you really were able to accomplish what you wanted to do.
You know, this is a great education. And for those of you listening who wish you would have taken notes starting about 25 minutes ago, it's okay. The archive recording will be available. You can listen to this and as many times as you like. You can download it. And I appreciate very much your taking the time to educate us all tonight. I've learned a tremendous amount. In the time we have remaining, Dean, you've got some things coming up I'd like to help you get the word out about. You're going to be doing some speaking in a few different places. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, of course. You know, I know you're in New Jersey and I'm in Oregon, but if you're in Oregon, in Newport, Oregon, I'll be talking for the Samaritan Hospital there in Newport on mindfulness and meditation next month. And then I'll be speaking again for the Samaritan Cancer Center in Corvallis, Oregon, coming up. Those dates aren't set. I'll be speaking in Vancouver, British Columbia, the end of July on Why Love Heals. And also I'll be talking with Baptiste Pop, as you said, the author of Why Love Heals. He and I will be speaking together doing a Saturday workshop there. And I'll have to make sure I get all this posted on my website because some of the dates aren't set or not all the information is exactly set. But if people will go to my website, not only, as you said earlier, they can get a free Why Love Heals e-course by going to my website and also a free download of a guided imagery exercise, Why Love Heals, and experience Why Love Heals. And obviously the people can purchase the book, Doctor's Orders Go Fishing, or Why Love Heals. And I feel good about what I wrote. There's good information there, I think good, helpful information.
Now, I want to mention what happened with my dog before we end tonight. My dog obviously didn't know how to do guided imagery for herself. I had a dog who in 1998 was diagnosed with kidney failure, and I wasn't willing to let that happen. I did not see an outcome where she had to die. So what I did was every day I visualized the color orange circulating through her genital urinary tract. I had been certified in color therapy few months earlier, and the school I was certified in said you have to use orange. At this point, I wouldn't use a color. I would just use love, but I needed a recipe back then. So I would visualize orange energy circulating through her genital urinary tract several times every day for 12 days in a row. On the 13th day, I saw a big puff of dark gray to black smoke leave her body. When I took her back to the vet, the kidney disease had completely cleared, and I did that through guided imagery. So even if you think, how can this happen for an animal, or how can this happen for somebody who has another health situation, there's no guarantees we're making here. I'm just sharing a story, and it worked for her. She lived 4.5 more years, and I think this had a lot to do with it.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised. You know, many times people think in terms of prayer, and they don't think it's unusual that they would pray for someone, and in some way, somehow, that it would facilitate that outcome. I mean, otherwise, why do we pray? We're asking for spiritual assistance, or we are believing in the power of our prayer that we can affect that outcome. But in fact, there is research showing that you can affect someone at a distance with your imagery. Now, I know you will appreciate this. I encourage people, if they're going to pray for others or imagine others in terms of some outcome, is they include the thought that if this is genuinely in their interest. You know, sometimes in fact, Dr. Dossie wrote a book, Be Careful What You Pray For, You Just Might Get It, is we think we know what is really best for everyone, even ourselves, and that certainly isn't always the case. But I believe we have the right and the ability to do it not only for ourselves but for others. But I think it's important to also take into account is in sending this healing energy, is that the person then uses it in a way that is best for that person rather than demanding a specific outcome that we think that person right. should have, if that makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not about our will anyhow. It's about we can do things, but it's really not up to us to decide what's going to happen.
Well, but of course you know that you can influence that.
Absolutely, you can. You can influence it for sure. This has been a great conversation, Dean. I always love having you on. I always learn so much, and we had such a good time together here. So thank you for playing with me once more on my playground. I appreciate it.
Well, you're very welcome. I appreciate the invitation and indeed sharing the information with you.
It's wonderful. Please come back in 2 weeks. We're going to talk about how do you love, and I'm going to have a presentation on that. In the meantime, visit deanshrock.com. That's deanshrock.com, and you'll get a lot of information there. My website is transformingthroughlove.com. I am your host, Cheryl Lynn. Thank you so much. Cheryl Hirsch Kramer, that's who I am these days. I used to be Cheryl Lynn on other radio shows. Hard to remember who I am, but I'm Cheryl. That never changed. Thank you for coming here tonight. I'm so happy to have you here. Please check out the archives. If you like what we're doing here, please tell your friends. And as always, we send you off with many blessings. Have a great 2 weeks.